Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Thursday, the 7th of September, 13 minutes past the hour, and we're delighted to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you and then we'll get started. I will tell you telling us some tales out of school. We're waiting for Teresa. She'll be here in a little bit. The traffic is horrible here in the Capital District. Everybody's been running a little bit late because of, it's the start of school and all the buses are out and things are on and people are getting used to being, going back to work and humans again. And but we'll get everybody here and assembled in a few moments. But let me introduce the wonderful folks who are here so far. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. He made it because he didn't have to leave his home. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Yes, it's going to be a very long and difficult day, and I will be leaving. But thank you, Joe, for inviting me.
Love having you. I'm glad you are here. Thank you very much. Also, hey, Alan, our good buddy Joe Bruschak is here.
We love Joe Bruschak. He is one of the smartest, most intelligent, most listenable guys we have ever spoken with. He's a great man.
He is a writer. He is the man behind the Saratoga Native American Festival, which takes place this Sunday, September 10th, at the National Museum of Dance in Saratoga Springs. He is on our advisory board, and he is a frequent author or a frequent guest in this program. When he has a book, we bring him on and talk to him, and we are thrilled that he is with us this morning to talk about all of the things that are going on in the world as well as in his world as well. How are you, sir?
I'm very good this morning, Joe, and there's almost too much going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. But we welcome your perspective, and we're very thankful that you were here to share it with us this morning. As I mentioned, Teresa Bourgeois is with us as well. She is a communications consultant. She is on her way. She is in the traffic and crawling. She just texted me, so she will be here as soon as she can. All right. So let's go into the topics at hand, and we'll get started for today and begin with this very odd story about Trump and, getting along with the Democrats. There are the pictures of Donald Trump and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and coming to some sort of agreement here. With a House looking at the debt ceiling and Harvey aid. And Alan, what do we make of this?
Well, I know what I make of it. I don't like it. And I'll tell you why. I think it's fine that finally there's been a little bit of give, and the president has had the wisdom to go to the Democrats, because there are plenty of Republicans who agree with the Democrats on those very issues that we're talking about. Nevertheless, here is a man who has done Donald Trump some really terrible things. And I don't want, because he agreed to go to 3 months on the debt limit as opposed to 6 months, which the Republicans wanted, or 9 months, I don't want him to be able to claim that he's the all-encompassing great conciliator, because he sure as heck isn't. I think he had some scores to settle with Mitch McConnell, but you know, this cannot help his stock with the Republicans, who really fell and were in that room in the Oval Office, and they had no idea what he was about to do. It's extraordinary.
What do you think, Alan, before I get Joe's perspective on this, what do you think actually they accomplished? I mean, will they be able to do anything meaningful through this partnership? Or is it just more for show?
Well, we don't know. We do know that the president was sitting in the Oval Office or in his office watching CNN after he pulled the DACA stuff and sending young, wonderful people back home to places that they never had been in. And we do know that. And so he was apparently dumbfounded by the amount of people who came out to protest all of that. The polls were showing it was a deeply unpopular thing for him to do, and he did it. And then he said, I better change this around. So he called Chuck and Nancy Pelosi. Chuck being a guy he had done business with for years. Because remember that Trump is not a man who we could call of principle. He's a guy who likes to get credit for deals. So he called Chuck, and Chuck was all too happy to do it because it creates disarray with the Republicans in their own ranks, and they are, and including his own secretary Mnuchin of the Treasury. It really left them all dumbfounded, and I think it's the most interesting thing. On the other hand, it proves once again he doesn't care. He didn't care what kind of health care bill he was going to get. He wanted a health care bill. He could have said anything, and he would have taken credit for it. That's what this guy's all about.
So let me just ask you this question, then I promise, Joe, I'll let you speak. And that is, so if you're Chuck Schumer, would you have taken the meeting?
Oh, yeah. I think when the president of the United States and you're negotiating and the president of the United States, you know, calls you up and says, come on over here. I don't think he knew what the deal was going to be. But he was sitting in his boardroom in Trump Tower and some guy said, OK, I'll give you this for it. And he knew that that was the best deal he was going to get. He would have said, OK, do it. And that's what he did. But can you imagine, did you see Mitch McConnell's face sitting there in the Oval Office? Did you see Ryan's face? Boy, and even as he's cutting the feet off Mnuchin, his own Treasury guy. So he is unprincipled, to put it mildly. I'm not criticizing him for doing the right thing in this case. But on the other hand, I don't want to let him off the hook for all the misdeeds he's had.
Well, they say, Joe, the politics makes strange bedfellows, but this was a little surprising.
I would say that the one thing we can count on with Donald Trump is that he is predictably unpredictable. Trump will do whatever he can to massage his own ego. If a person is an egoist in the highest office in the world, they're going to do things constantly in response to public opinion and also their own particular desire to be the center of attraction. So anything Trump can do that will draw attention to himself, he's going to do. And I think sometimes we have to separate the man from the office itself. The office of the president is deeply important to this country. If we can make use of that office, if we can connect ourselves in that office to some way that will make things better, then I think that Chuck Schumer did exactly the right thing. But it doesn't mean that Schumer is in Trump's camp.
No.
It doesn't mean that Schumer is going to support any of the crazy, I mean literally crazy things that Donald Trump has done and is going to do in the future. Be sure that will happen.
I understand that, and I agree with you both entirely. But I have to say, when I saw the picture of the two embracing in the Oval Office, like, didn't you just feel icky? I mean, you did want to take a shower after it.
That's what we call the kiss of death.
Right. It's just like, oh God. Run.
Right. And it also undermines people's faith in politicians, right? I mean, think about that for a second. Chuck Schumer, who's been railing against Trump, all of a sudden is kissing Trump or hugging Trump. Doesn't that undermine the way that people think about our politicians, that they really don't stand for anything?
But by the same token, then that makes us hypocritical, doesn't it? Because we're the ones who are always saying, well, why can't they get along? Why can't they go across the aisle? Why can't they discuss these issues? And then they go and do that. And,
my son Jonas, who is far brighter than I am, has always said to me, Dad, the U.S.E., the use is on. So I think the use was on in this particular case. And I agree with what Joe said, as always brilliant, what Joe said, which is that, this is not permanent. It was 3 months. That's what he got. And not anything more than that. And if we fall for that and say, OK, this is the new Donald Trump, boy, are we out of our minds.
But it does show a greater, I mean, it does show the fracture within the Republican Party and how much damage has been done in that relationship. I think it's safe to say on both sides, right? I mean, the president, but from Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan as well.
And even worse, he puts the United States Senator, the Democratic Heidi Heitkamp, onto the plane with him and is seen basically I don't mean this sexually, but, you know, smooching with her, intellectually smooching with her. And this is a woman. And this is a woman who the Republicans are counting on defeating so that they can continue their control of the Senate. And here's Trump basically saying to them, if you guys think, in his own perception, you're going to mistreat me and that I'm not capable of pulling the rug out from under you, you watch what I'm doing now.
I think of Trump looming over Hillary Clinton during the debates.
Yep.
And Clinton later saying, what I wanted to say was back off, creep.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, if which, you, shake Joe, hands, you shake hands with the devil, count your fingers afterwards.
Which, by the way, Joe, you know, I should have said, we're all famous for saying, I should have said.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Didn't. She should have said.
The other is somewhat headline, and it's not, I mean, it's the gravity of it, I guess, is somewhat not important. However, I want to bring it up, and that was the Ivanka drop by during that meeting. There apparently has been reporting that there many of the Republican leaders were, quote, visibly annoyed by Ivanka's presence at the meeting. The move is that she enters the Oval Office to say hello during the meeting, which brings it then off topic, which apparently some are saying is a tactic used by the president to kind of interject and say, move things in a different direction.
Yeah, watch the family. Watch Trump's family and how they're deployed, how they're used, how Trump puts words in their mouths or later makes them a sort of public figure. It's a very interesting sort of dance that he's doing.
Not only that, didn't he say something earlier, maybe in the campaign, about Ivanka and how attractive she was, and if she wasn't his daughter, he'd want to date her?
Well, those were things that were brought up during the campaign that he had said prior in interviews, but yes.
So Joe's right. When they need her to be, she can be a distraction of every kind.
The White House, GOP officials, GOP senior GOP source says to the Washington Post that Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell were already shell-shocked by what had just happened when she arrived.
Well, I have a question for both of you, which is what exactly was he trying to accomplish with her being there? I mean, do we know that? And part two on your blue books is why? In other words, what was it? What was really going on with her? I don't really understand what the game was.
Well, we saw yesterday, there was an earlier meeting, Joe, maybe you can help me on this, but there was an earlier meeting maybe about 2 months ago where she also came in with it was with the New York Times.
That's
right. The meeting with the New York Times.
She showed up in the middle of that interview.
They were in the middle of the interview with the New York Times, and she came in and she brought in the grandchildren and so forth, and they felt that was very calculated. He said yesterday when he went to North Dakota to give a tax reform speech, he said that the president said, Daddy, can I come with you? And I said, yes, you can, honey. And then she walks out. So that it seems to be this drop by, if you will, is something that is a tactic, I guess, is being used to. And let us not forget, I don't want to dismiss the fact that she is a representative of the White House. She has an office in the White House. She has a job in that administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, distraction and misdirection are two of the main points used in magic. If you want to get something across, you take people's attention off the real thing that's happening.
I'm reminded of JFK and the children coming in. It's the most famous, iconic pictures of all, with John Jr. and Carolyn playing in the White House when they came in. Somewhere in a playbook of what presidents do, especially with the grandchildren there, is an attempt at I'll have some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna get some we're gonna take some letters. We're gonna hopefully Teresa will be here in a little bit, and we'll go on with some other issues. You have an instrument in front of you. What do you have there?
Yes, I have a Native American flute. I thought I'd at some point play a little bit of it.
Do you want to play us into break?
That'd be great.
Okay, so this is Joe Baruchek playing us into break. I just want to remind you that the and we'll talk to Joe and find out a little bit more about this. But the Saratoga Native American Festival takes place this Sunday, September 10th, at the National Museum of Dance in Saratoga Springs. And here, playing us into break is Joe Baruchek. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a beautiful panel for you. Alan Chartok is here. Native American writer Joe Baruchek is with us, and he is the man behind the Saratoga Native American Festival. We'll talk about that in a few moments. And communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is here, and we are thrilled to have you here. Good morning.
I'm so delighted to be here, and I'm so sorry that I was late. But that flute was so calming while I was stuck in traffic.
That was beautiful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I do want to say this festival is takes place at the National Museum of Dance in Saratoga. You've been doing this for a few years?
Yes, actually, we've been at it for about a decade. This is the first time we're at the Museum of Dance, and that's actually at the invitation of the museum itself, wanting us to be part of their programming. So we're thrilled and delighted about that.
You can find... Go ahead, Alan.
Joe, I wanted to ask a question if I could, because it's been much on my mind. In fact, I've just been writing about it, and that has to do with the statue of Columbus and Columbus Circle, and whether, you know, I mean, we do know that the Confederate stuff needs to be taken down, according to so many people. That's if you happen to be African American, perfectly appropriate and the right. I couldn't agree more with that. On the other hand, there has been some sense that, you know, Columbus was not exactly nice to the Native Americans. And I'm wondering whether you can take us on, or just to take a couple of seconds to tell us what your reaction to all of this has been.
Well, I don't want to upset the Knights of Columbus. And I understand that it's part of the heritage of many people to idolize this person. But it is true that he and his son Diego basically depopulated many islands of the Caribbean through slavery, searching for gold, and that Columbus himself was, in what he created, not creating a paradise, but destroying a paradise that already existed. So I think that's important to recognize. But my feeling is we need to be balanced, we need to hear all sides, and we need to speak with each other and not at each other.
So you feel we should be in the discussion stage?
I think so. That's one reason why we have the Native Festival, is to bring people in to see what Native culture is, that we are still here, that despite over 500 years of genocide, enslavement, and sometimes forcing children into schools and taking away their identity, that we still exist as a people, that we're part of this great and vibrant nation, one of the threads that holds America together.
We have some letters. I'd like to get to those. James writes the subject matter of his email, Trump, Schumer, kissy face. Could Trump be trying to kiss up to Dems to get them to ease up a bit on the Russian investigation?
And he wasn't the only one who wrote he wasn't the only one who wrote that, Joe. I mean, I think that it's right on target in that no matter what diversions are taking place right now, Mueller is doing his investigation. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe it's going to bear some fruit. And so from the very beginning, the firing of Comey and everything else have to do with that. If you've done wrong, they're going to find it. I mean, I'm fascinated by the Menendez trial in New Jersey, in which mm-hmm. the lawyer comes out day one and says, "Yeah, he did everything, but you don't understand why he did it." Yeah. And so, you know, we do know that there's been some real hanky panky on the Russian front, and that Trump has been nervous about it. He told the Russians, "I fired Comey to make it right with to take the pressure off." So I think no matter what happens, no matter what deals happen right now, this is gonna keep on going, and there's no way of stopping it now.
Teresa, we didn't get your thoughts on the deal brokered yesterday in the Oval Office.
Yeah, I think a couple things. First of all, I think he was trying to change the subject from DACA. And I don't think he understood the complexity of what he was doing. I think he was also trying to buy time because he doesn't like to lose, and he sees these looming deadlines, and he knew he couldn't make them. And he doesn't understand the implications of forcing the Republicans twice to vote on an increased debt limit and also to pile everything up at the end of the year. Certainly the Democrats understood the implications of forcing the Republicans twice to raise the debt limit. He also knows that if you don't raise the debt limit, then the markets get very shaky. And the one thing that he's hanging on to is keep pointing to how well the markets are doing. Mm-hmm. I also think he might thought that he needed to buy more time because he wants to pass this tax bill. He doesn't have the money unless he can do health care. He has some glimmer of hope because McCain may be moving on the health care bill. Mm-hmm. But the concern that I have is that the president can't be trusted on his word. And once people sit him down and explain to him the complexity of what he does, will he renege on the agreement?
You know, I think of it this way. Trump is clever, but he's not brilliant.
Exactly.
He's constantly playing checkers, but he doesn't know how to play chess.
That's right.
It's one move at a time, and sometimes no thought of what the consequences would be.
Right, right. And I think that that's exactly right. One move at a time. But he doesn't really understand the complexities of legislating. So I don't think he understood what a complex problem he created for the Republicans and what he did.
Let's go back to the letters. Thomas writes, Trump is the product of television. Ivanka is the equivalent of a commercial when she drops in. It gives her father a chance to catch his breath, collect his thoughts, and distract whatever the audience is. She's there to help her father sell a product, whatever he wants to sell.
Well, she talked politics at a government event yesterday, and if she, in fact, is a government employee, my question was when I heard it, is that a violation of the Hatch Act?
Well, I think the Hatch Act is something that the Trump family can't even spell, much less understand.
Gregory writes, have Joe on more often, love the flute. And then Susan writes, dear Mr. Bruchak, can you please comment on the Native American movement to stop fossil fuel infrastructure from Sandusfield, Mass. To a Standing Rock to British Columbia, Canada?
It would take a long time to comment in detail, but I certainly can say this. It's one of the most important issues of our generation. What's happening to this planet is happening to all of us, and Native people are not just speaking up for their own concerns, but for what will happen seven generations from now with the tar sands of Canada, with the pipelines polluting the world's water. All of these things that are occurring because of the fossil fuel industry, which we do not need. We need to go to sustainable and humane and ecologically sound sources for our power.
I'd be interested in your thoughts. I was so struck yesterday by President Trump, you know, in the bookend of two hurricanes between Harvey and Irma, mm-hmm. We know that they're more, you know, you can't say that the hurricanes were caused by global warming, but certainly the strength of them, the waters are so warm that they're picking up so much water, so the strength and the amount of water. And so what does he do yesterday? He goes to North Dakota, to the hometown mm-hmm. of Senator Heitkamp, and he stands in front of two oil refineries, and he talks about how great it was that they got out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and he gives a verbal hug to the person who is the Bacchanal, you know, his big mm-hmm. money guy, the Bacchanal. So, and talks about how great it was, his Standing Rock decision that no one else would do. So what signal does that send?
I think that one thing we need to recognize is that early on, I'm talking about hundreds of years ago, Native people began warning the Western mind that what it was doing was destroying itself. There's a very famous incident where a particular Kiowa elder confronted an army man and said, I want to ask you a question. If you drive away all the animals, if you cut all the forests, if you poison all the waters so you can't even drink them yourself, my question is this, are you people all crazy?
Let's go back to the letter. Stephen writes, Trump is now the most bipartisan president in the 21st century.
He meant bipolar, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Was he being sarcastic or is he serious?
I don't know. I'm only going by the words on the page. Allie writes to Alan's comment regarding, did you see McConnell's face? Did you see Ryan or Mnuchin's face? Seriously, those faces are always the same. Frozen, non-empathetic, and non-responsive.
Boy, but, I heard Ryan's response on DACA, and wasn't that a convoluted mess where he tried to explain why it wasn't horrible?
Dan writes, you know what President Trump is all about, so why the surprise? He's playing everyone against everyone. Over a million lives lost in Iraq for no weapons of mass destruction, and we have a Trump lookalike with weapons of mass destruction, and we do nothing. Brilliant. And then Michael writes, I would not be surprised one bit that the sole intention behind Kim Jong-un's provocation is to watch Trump sweat and make a fool out of himself, and it apparently is working. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan?
You know, Joe, I was fascinated by something. I always learn something on this program, but something Teresa said about McCain switching on the health care bill, that there's some evidence of that. I didn't know that, Teresa. Where have we gleaned this from?
So he has signed on to a Republican version of Trump Care. So that's why I don't know for sure if that's why, but I assume that's why Trump, in speaking in North Dakota yesterday, very gleefully kept saying one vote, but maybe, you know, things are going to change now. Maybe things are going to change. So, while the chair of the Senate Help Committee, Alexander, and his Democratic counterpart started hearings yesterday with the insurance commissioners and today with the governors on a short-term fix. The Trump administration is still pushing for an overall repeal and replace. And I assume they're doing it because as they try to put together the tax package, they realize they can't get their tax cuts for the top 1% unless they get this health care funding. But yes, McCain did sign on to a health care bill sometime in the last few days that makes people have a glimmer of hope that they can switch his vote. Plus, you have the situation in New Jersey, so
Menendez.
So you might lose Menendez. You know, it's possible, hopefully not, but you lose Menendez's vote. So I think that's what they're focused on.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Joe Bruschak, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your comments. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our program. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning, the 7th of December. Let's move on to another topic, and that is DACA. And I want to talk about this. We'll start off with mentioning that attorneys general from 15 states, as well as the District of Columbia, are suing to save DACA. A group of the attorneys general from those states filed a lawsuit Wednesday to stop the administration from winding down the DACA program, which granted a reprieve from deportation to undocumented immigrants who came to the United States as children. The suit filed in federal court in the Eastern District of New York alleges that rescinding the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program was a culmination of President Trump's off-stated commitments, whether personally held, stated to appease some portion of his constituency, or some combination thereof, to punish and disparage people with Mexican roots. Joe Bruschak, let me begin with you. As a Native American, how do you look at a program like this and this controversy? Because it seems that your perspective would be different, but also very wise.
Well, to begin with, our border security sucked in 1492.
That's right. Needed a wall.
Okay.
But, you know.
Point taken.
And the rest of us are immigrants.
Exactly.
Right?
I have to say that we have to understand that every generation, a new group of people is demonized. And I have Slovak ancestors. And my Slovak ancestors were called brownheads and were the low part of the ladder, worked in the steel mills of Pennsylvania. So you have to give people the opportunity to prove who they are before we define them as something other than worthy human beings. The fact that 800,000 people have signed up for DACA, they're just the ones who signed up. There's a lot more people who could have signed up. They passed all of the tests. They're proven to be useful American citizens. And yet we're not giving them that chance to be citizens. We're talking about removing them from the country and costing the United States, one estimate is $14 billion to do this. It is, again, an example of something that was done on face value, not on what it really means. And I think as Native people, we have always adopted, one of the major ceremonies in every Native American culture is adoption, bringing people in, because the recognition was that when you bring people in, you bring in new ideas, new energy, new possibility.
Alan, as far as this action by the attorneys general, what do you make of it, and how do you think it will wind its way through the courts?
You know what I think? I think the game is over for Trump on this. I think he knows it. He took a look at it. He got very frightened, obviously, and he kept reversing himself and inverting himself and saying, "Okay, I'm sending it to the Congress." Everybody thought he thought he was brilliant. But then that didn't work, so he said, well, if the Congress doesn't handle it, I'll do it. So what's the logic there? In other words, why send it to the Congress in the first place since he started the whole thing? I think the Attorney General thing helped everything along, right? Because they were saying, we're going to get you on this. And then he said, this is not a winning hand, and he gave up. That's what I think is happening.
But Alan, what's his procedural, I mean, I understand what his rhetorical way out is, but there has to be a procedural way out because the mechanisms have already begun. Mm-hmm. They announced today, the Justice Department, that they're not going to, I guess it'd be Homeland Security, they're not going to accept any more registrations.
Right.
And the clock is already ticking because regardless of what Donald Trump said, the process is now in place to freeze this and begin the deportation process. So what is the mechanism? And the thing that I'm curious about these legal cases is that then forces the Justice Department's hand to argue one side of the issue or the other. So are they going to argue the side that Jeff Sessions said in his press conference? Are they going to, which is these people have to go? Or are they going to argue the side that Donald Trump says, I want to have hard and I'm going to do it? I mean, what's the procedural here going to be?
You're quite right. I mean, you're quite right that is what's left over from the mess that he created himself. On the other hand, I suspect that since Sessions and he don't get along that well, we know that, and Sessions was probably upset by what the president was doing here, that since nothing means anything, right, Teresa? Nothing means anything when it comes out of this guy's mouth. I suspect he'll find a way out to say, okay, this is a loser. Let's get rid of it. That's what I'm thinking.
But it's not unlike, you know, while he says all different sides of the environment issue, Pruitt over at EPA is just methodically marching through the EPA and destroying these regulations.
Yeah.
And so the rhetoric doesn't match the process, but it's the process that holds, and it's the process that's ruled, you know. And I can't imagine a scenario in which the Congress can do what they haven't been able to do for 15 years, which is come to a legislative agreement on immigration, and certainly not now when you've backed up.
Yep.
Everything now is going to happen in December. You're going to have a budget agreement. You're going to have to raise the debt limit for the second time. And, you know, you have a whole host of issues now that are all congregated in December. And you're going to have a huge bill both for Irma and for Harvey.
And
now
for the other, and for the other five that are backing up.
And now Katya or Jose. So, you know, it's going to get raucous.
Well, I have two thoughts with this, too. One is that we're living through W.B. Yeats' second coming. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. And what rough beast, our command last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. And I also feel like at times we're on the yellow brick road, and Donald Trump embodies all the worst characters of the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of the Wizard.
Mm. Yeah, there, and he's behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the curtain.
E.J. Dionne had a piece yesterday from the Washington Post, just that you pull back the curtain and there's no there. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to realize. It's not no any great strategy. There's actually just no there. That was his piece in the Post yesterday. Mm-hmm. I love E.J. Dionne's writing.
Good stuff. Let me go back to... Did anybody want to say anything else on DACA before we move on that?
Well, I just don't know.
No, but I do want to say that just because it's inside baseball and because I love it, the best guy ever covering the legislature for the New York Times was E.J. Dionne.
Mm-hmm.
He was wonderful. And, of course, everybody sees him as a national guy and one of the major pundits of the country now. But he was right here doing his thing.
Good stuff. Let's move on to some letters. We have Steve's letter, who writes and said, I remember watching The Tonight Show and some mid-level star would be talking with Johnny and all of a sudden Bob Hope or some other big announced big star would come out, the band playing the star's theme song and totally steal the attention from the guest on the seat. A showbiz stunt that the Trumps have co-opted for their purposes. Jim writes, on the issue of removing statues, General Sheridan directed the war against Native Americans with exceptional brutality in the 1870s. Should we remove the enormous equestrian statue of General Sheridan, which is on the front lawn of the Capitol steps?
Well, I think Joe, it goes to Joe, of course, but I think his analysis, which is that this can be used as a talking point for education, for telling people exactly how that happened, which they have no idea about at all. Right, Joe?
I think it's really true that we can't erase history, but we can try to understand history. So if we make a blank spot in history, there's nothing there. But if we look at that place in history and do a very careful analysis from many different points of view, that history comes alive and perhaps can teach us something for the future.
Keep the statues, but add some perspective, which is then they become teachable moments. That's been my thought.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with books in libraries. Don't pull books out of libraries, but make people aware of what books are actually saying.
Patrick writes, good or bad, to view historical figures as two-dimensional is a disservice to our complex history. Carol writes, another benefit of the association between Trump and the Democrats is to keep his opponents off balance. And in Trump's opinion, everyone is an opponent because he views himself as the lone leader in business and in government. I think Joe Bruschek says Maxine should be a regular. Thank you, Mr. Bruschek. Eloquent, balanced, and well-spoken as always.
And beautiful flute.
And beautiful flute. Hopefully he'll play a flute into our next break.
Please.
And then Tom reminds us that Joe will be part of the Poughkeepsie Public Library District's annual Big Read this October. So that's...
Well, that's true. I'm looking forward to that.
Your agent is working overtime.
That's great good. Folks out in Poughkeepsie.
Good stuff. All right. So before we go into break, I just want to remind people that Joe Bruschek is the man behind the Saratoga Native American Festival, which you can find out all about by going to saratoganativefestival.com. It takes place this Sunday, September 10th at the National Museum of Dance. And we will talk more and have more on our panel, Alan Chartok, Joe Bruchak, and Teresa Bourgeois. Welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. And we'll let Mr. Bruchak play the flute and bring us into break this morning. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And well, by the way, that was just lovely going to the break. Beautiful music.
Thank you.
Did you, this is obviously handmade. Who did you make this? Or
I didn't make this one, but I do make flutes.
That's okay. It's just
Eric
gorgeous.
Marzak, a really wonderful flute maker, made this one for me.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. We were saying during the break, you know, Alan, wouldn't it be great if all of our panelists would just play their own music going into break? That'd be great.
Be happy to, Joe.
Yeah, yes. Just you and your banjo, go to town, man.
I'll bring the banjo right in.
Sounds good.
I said that would happen. I predicted this, Alan.
Trust me, it would not compare with what we heard.
We have some letters. Daisy writes, I sort of get what Pelosi and Schumer were doing, sort of, but Heidi Heitkamp, does being a senator mean that much to her? In Al Franken's book, he says that too many senators are willing to go too far to hold onto their seats, and this is way too far. Anybody want to?
Yes, I do. I wrote back to her already because I saw that email. The issue here is not her personal need for whatever. The issue here is the Democrats controlling the United States Senate. And that's what I think was going on here. Trump was sticking a sharp stick in the eye of Mitch McConnell, because that one vote, now especially with Menendez up there. And by the way, the Menendez case is very interesting in that if you've been following the United States Supreme Court, that's how Shelley Silver seems to be getting off and everybody else. You have to really prove the quid pro quo. And the Supreme Court has been saying you got to really do that. And if you can't do it, you can't have a case, even though it looks that way. And I think that's what Abby Lowell, the brilliant attorney for Menendez, is going to be arguing.
Right. Well, I think Senator Heitkamp, I mean, the president went to her hometown. Obviously, he was in one way taking her on directly. And then he kept almost begging her to come up on stage. She hesitated for a while to come up on stage. And then she did, but stayed in the background. But after it was, you know, it was mostly about, you know, rhetoric on taxes. But I think she hit it just right in her comments right after, where she says, and I quote, "But as North Dakota's former tax commissioner, I know the devil is in the details of any reform plan, as tax codes are complex." Because he kept demanding, you know, you better vote for this or not, or else you better vote for this or else. But all there is on the table right now with the Republicans is tax rhetoric. There's not a tax bill. And the little bit that we've learned about the Republicans' the Trump tax bill is that it doesn't match his rhetoric, just like the health care bill that they put on the table eventually did not match the rhetoric.
Well, the Republicans have discovered, after being the party of no, that it's almost impossible to say yes.
Let's go to Mike's letter, who writes, the birth of the new world took place just blocks away from WAMC along the shores of the Hudson River, Fort Nassau, Fort Orange, Beverwyck. It seems we don't remember the unique role of Native people in our region's history. Is there anything the Native community would like to see the Capital Region do to better support and celebrate the unique historic relations forged between Mohawk, Mohicans, and early Dutch settlers?
There's no way I can speak for everyone. I can only speak for myself. But my own feeling as a person of Native heritage is that we need to listen to each other. We need to be aware of history. We need to put it in the schools more prominently. And that we have to stop thinking of it as combat, but think of it as bringing us together.
I like that.
Right.
I like that. Greg writes, President Trump's love and obsession with the media is well documented. There was a lot of media focus on the amount of work the new session of Congress had, including on the roundtable. Perhaps the president was responding to a media narrative, as he often does. He went into yesterday's meeting willing to take any deal that cleared some of the docket. He hasn't gotten this press this positive since he ordered strikes on Syria.
And yet, Joe, and yet, it's tricky. Because on the one hand, the letter writer is right. That's correct. On the other, Trump, in his whatever complicated narcissism and the rest of it, seems to in some way enjoy the negative press. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yes.
I think, yes, he's obsessed with getting press. But like the art of the deal, I don't think he cares what the result is as long as he's the top story.
Right, as long as it's about him.
Right.
As long as it's about him. Bill Kristol wrote of this, and I thought this was interesting. He says, as Trump tosses Republicans and conservatives under the bus, one thinks they chose dishonor over defeat, but they will have dishonor and defeat. Mm. That's pretty profound.
Interesting. Which Billy Kristol was that?
That's not the funny one.
Got it. Really. William Kristol.
Yeah, William Kristol. Not the funny one.
Not the funny one.
Okay, we'll go back to other stories on our docket, which include North Korea and the strategy. The article in the Washington Post this morning with the headline, Trump's zigzagging approach to North Korea veers toward military options. President Trump's approach to the rapidly rising threat from North Korea has veered from empathy for the country's bellicose leader to finger-pointing at China to quick-tempered threats of possible military action. The administration's goals and tactics have also shifted from isolating North Korea to reassuring leader Kim Jong-un that the United States won't overthrow him to threats of, as Defense Secretary Jim Mattis put it, annihilation. Mm-hmm. Before Pyongyang's sixth and largest nuclear test Sunday, Trump had said U.S. military options were locked and loaded should North Korea behave rashly. On Wednesday, Trump sounded subdued and statesmanlike. We're going to see what happens, he said, when asked whether he is considering military action against North Korea. We'll see what happens. Certainly, that's not our first choice, but we'll see what happens.
Well, can North Korea survive without China? That's the thing that I wonder if people really considered. Are we focusing our efforts in the right direction? We know that the Kim regimes are not people who are behaving in logical fashions, and they clearly feel that if they don't have nuclear weapons, they're not going to exist. So what are their guarantees of existence? I think China is their guarantee of existence. And if China can be brought to bear upon the subject and convince North Korea that without those nukes they can continue to exist as a stable country, then perhaps things could be better. But right now, heading towards a possible nuclear war is one of the craziest things that anyone could do.
I couldn't agree with you more, Joe. Here's the deal. And I think I said it yesterday in some form, but not nearly as articulately as you just did, which is the negotiations clearly can't be with North Korea because they eschew them right now. But the negotiations should be with China, and we should be asking ourselves what? What do they want? Well, what they don't want is South Korea on their borders and the Americans on their borders. So it seems to me that that's a deal we could make. We could say, let's work that out so that there are a thousand ways of making sure that if you rein in North Korea, we will guarantee you that separation will continue. Am I off on that?
That's what I feel. I think you're right, Alan. And the fact that South Korea is doubling up on its military exercises and trying to establish a more powerful system of rockets that they could actually strike North Korea. That's such a wrong direction for South Korea and the United States to take. I think all the other countries in the region are shuddering at the thought of this kind of confrontation building even further.
a couple of other thoughts on this. Whatever Mattis says, right, doesn't matter. Because we have seen this president, you know, cut the legs out from everybody, all of his people. So it means something, of course, but it doesn't. It means something. But this president is certainly capable of change on a dime, right? So so I'm thinking that this China thing that you've just mentioned is the number one way to go, and that clearly can be done. Now, the president of South Korea, right?
Mm-hmm.
I keep saying right. I don't know where this tick got into me, but it did. But the president of South Korea is no friend of Trump's. They don't like each other. But on the other hand, and the South Korean president keeps saying negotiation over war. And I'm fascinated by that because now the South Koreans are setting up these other defenses that we're reading about. Fascinating.
Yeah, Teresa. It's concerning to add more U.S.-sold weapons to the mix. There, you know, you see what happened in Saudi Arabia with Yemen now becoming more and more destabilized after U.S. added more weapons, selling them into the region and adding more weapons to the mix. And that's further destabilizing that situation. So what I'm looking toward is the U.N. General Assembly is meeting in a few weeks in New York City, where all of these folks, Trump and others, are all going to be together in one place. And what's going to happen there? What's our message going to be? But the problem is, just like with, you know, our earlier conversation on the legislative process or on DACA, on all of this, you have a president that has, you know, is not articulating one common message, and that his administration is not articulating a message consistent with his. And that is a recipe for tripping into war as opposed to going into war.
So Teresa, I love what you're saying, but let me ask you this. You said it'll be interesting to watch what the message is. What should the message be there?
You mean at the general
at the UN
General Assembly?
Yeah.
Well, I think that the balance that has to be struck is that what is the role that China can play, so that, you know, Joe's exactly right that China does not want South Korea as its neighbor, as its border. They want the North Korean buffer, but equally they don't want to destabilize North Korea because they don't want North Korea to fall apart and then have North Korea be their problem. And so the question is, what is the right mix to stabilize it? And then we have a new problem, I think, that I'm trying to get a better understanding of with these two storms, with Harvey and Irma. That is really changing the picture for our exports and what we're going to need as imports. And because our cotton crop now is in deep trouble, our fruit and vegetable crops are in deep trouble.
At least 20% of the Texas crop, which was supposed to be a bumper crop this year, has been destroyed. I think the percentage is going to get higher.
Right. And so a lot of these trade talks that are going on, the equation is now going to change with those. And our trade with China, we're going to have some different needs a week from now than we have now, depending on where, you know, the assessment of Harvey and where Irma hits. And so I think that there's so many complexities in this that Trump himself is not even beginning to understand, and that he doesn't have the people in place in the State Department and the focus on what the international needs are going to be for the, you know, how the equation's going to change because of this storm. So it's really it's getting more complicated, and I think this UN General Assembly meeting is going to be fascinating.
Well, the fact that our trade deficit with China decreased slightly this year, we'll see what happens next year when we have these exports that are so important that suddenly are not going to be available.
We're not going to be able to export. We're not going to export the cotton to China that we would otherwise. We're not going to, you know, what about the soybeans? What about, what happens if we lose the crops in the orange crop in Florida, or I don't know if that's the right cycle. I'm sorry, I didn't check that. I should have. But Georgia, you know, what happens if we lose the crops in Georgia? It's really going to change. And the chemical plants, you know, these chemical plants are part of a global supply chain. So
well,
where is that business going to
go? Well, have you noticed that
the
price of gas has gone up by 30 to 40 cents in the last week and a half as a result of what happened to the refineries
and more.
In Texas?
And
it will continue going
up. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that idea that when people built these refineries and these chemical tanks along the sides of easily floodable areas, it's an example of the kind of poor planning that the United States infrastructure has been victim to for decades, and we're not looking towards the future. The idea that this hurricane is only one of many that will continue to come means we're going to have to really change what we're doing in terms of producing petroleum products for the world and especially for our own economy.
Which and again, as well as watching price gouging on everybody's parts, including the oil companies
and the airlines.
And the which then brings me back to how astounding it was that Donald Trump stood yesterday in North Dakota in front of a refinery talking about how great it was that he got out of the Paris Climate Agreement. I mean, it just, it was so...
great point.
What is the word? You know, just
disgusting.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, but it just was so out of sync with everything else. First of all, other things that he should be focusing on.
Okay, so does he not know any better, or is it crazy like a fox?
Well, I think that they're myopically focused on these key states. That's what Ivanka Trump, when she got up and stood at the microphone in a government event, said, "We're so glad to be here. We thank you so much for all you did for us in November. We're always glad to come back here, and you're so close." I mean, I think that they are methodically, you know, walking through their key primary states to shore up their base to see what, because they have to try to hold their votes in 2018, and they've got their political schedule and they're staying on it.
Well, because we have a reality television figure in the White House, we have to expect the surreal.
Right. And it really is like episode by episode. You know, you had your morning episode in the legislative bomb throwing.
As we were saying.
And then
right.
you have the afternoon episode, you know, where daddy.
Stay tuned.
You know, and so what's today's episode going to be?
Yeah.
But as you say, it's so true. You said it just right. He plays checkers, not chess.
And it's a question of ratings, not results.
Right. And governing is chess. You know, you have to, it's as is diplomacy. Diplomacy is definitely chess.
Well, it's actually a three-dimensional chess.
Right.
You come right on down to
it. And as Mario Cuomo used to say, the bad politicians think one move at a time, and the good ones think six moves at a time.
I miss Mario.
Let's end with a letter or two. This one from Apple, who writes, "Trump has repeatedly created or incited anger, violence, upset, fear, and frustration on many issues that could have been handled with dignity, respect, and compassion. Instead, he uses tactics that include shaming, bullying, and blackmail. He allows the situations to deteriorate and never takes responsibility for anything he does." At the 11th hour, he comes in to save the day, and everyone is grateful. Our country and fellow Americans are dancing a dangerous dance. Alan.
I just said, do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly right. I don't know about the last part. I don't know if he's fooling most people. His numbers, by the way, keep going down, not up, keep going down. So in New York State, I think I just saw a Siena poll. I'm not sure this, that showed him in the 20s now.
We will we'll check. I haven't seen that.
No,
I will look.
No, Siena in New York State.
Oh, in New York State. In New York State. Okay. All right. And we have this letter from Bob, who says, "I'm hoping you'll address the Republican attack on the 2020 census. Already important content and our operational tasks have been canceled, and more cuts are coming in the upcoming omnibus bill. I raise this as the former chief demographer for New York State."
Well, you know, it's funny. Brilliant. When I, because of the hour, the timing, I did not want to talk about the census as soon as, but when Alan said that, I think the real issue here that we need to focus on is the U.S. Census and what the Trump administration is doing with the U.S. Census. We could do an hour or more on that because people are focusing on redistricting, which is really important, but they are playing with the census. And that affects our voting. It affects how dollars are distributed. And they're doing it with very little attention. I've been reading a lot about that. We really need to have a much more attention on the census.
All right. We are out of time, but I want to thank all of our panelists. Teresa, thank you. Wonderful to have you here. Also, Joe Bruschak, you'll come back, right?
Please.
I certainly enjoy this. I'd be happy to do it again.
I would love to have you come back. That would just be marvelous. A reminder that the Saratoga Native American Festival takes place September 10th. That's this Sunday from 9:30 to 7:30, and it's free. Free admission.
And will there be flute playing?
And it takes place, I'm sure. It takes place at the National Museum of Dance in Saratoga Springs, New York. Dancing and storytelling, music, traditional foods, arts, crafts, jewelry, cultural demonstrations, activities for the kids. And again, 9:30 to 7 on the campus of the National Museum of Dance. September 10th, it's the Saratoga Native American
Indoors,
Festival.
Indoors, so it's rain or shine.
Yes, and at SaratogaNativeFestival.com. Joe Bruschak, lovely to have you here. Alan, thank you. Wonderful to have you with us. Thank you. Safe travels. And we'll end with some beautiful flute from Mr. Joe Bruschak, and we'll be back.